We're about to meet a guy who spent decades carving out some space for himself in a society that didn't seem to have any room for him. Patrick Haggerty is a gay man in his 70s, and one of the ways that he looked to claim that space was through music, country music. In the early 70s, as the gay liberation movement was taking shape, Haggerty and his pals cut an album in Seattle. It was called Lavender Country, and it's thought to be the world's first openly gay country album. He says it was provocative, but also good music, and still he didn't think that much would come of it.
It was hopeless to even consider anything like gay country in 1973. And besides, it was unabashedly radical. And so, other than have a good time with it ourselves, it had to die, and did.
Why country music?
There's two answers to that. One, why not? It's authentic, it's from the heart, it's American, it's familiar to a lot of people. Just because you're gay doesn't mean you can't be country. So that's the short answer. Buzz off, why not country? As good as any other genre. The second answer is, I'm not a seasoned, trained, go-to-college musician. I grew up at the mouth of the Owa River, west of Port Angeles. I'm a down-home dirt boy from a sharecropping, dairy farming family. And I did Lavender Country and chose that genre because it was the only kind of music I knew how to do.
Could you talk about some of the songs that were on the original album and what the inspirations were?
Back in the Closet Again is a song about how we as homosexuals had to kick our way into the labor movement, the women's movement, the movement for human rights and civil rights.
I'm back in the closet again.
And that we were unable to unite as a working class, and therefore the capitalists won.
Oh, I have to be alone because I'm sitting all alone back in the closet again.
Come Out Singing is just a gay liberation song about the joy of gay sex.
Waking up to say hip hip hooray, I'm glad I'm gay.
How was it received?
It put a scarlet letter on my chest. We knew that gay music in general was not going to be taken seriously by anybody except us. And I'd never sing in Nashville in this life. That turned out not to be true.
What gave you the courage to do something this new?
It came from my father. That's a whole big well.
Could we dip a bucket in that well?
We could. I don't believe in God, and I'm not much into religion, but something in the universe bestowed on me an absolutely ballerina, perfect, magnificent father for who I was and where I was headed. And he was disguised as a snuff-chewing, Farmer Brown pants-wearing, country bumpkin hayseed. My father saw who he had on his hands at a very early age, like 5. And in his mind, I was the child that God gave him to love. And by damn, he was going to do it some kind of way, because that was his job. And the way he taught me to take pride in myself was that he took pride in me. That's how that job is done. That wasn't an easy job for a kid who wore ballerina outfits at the 4-H camp and went to the Catholic Youth Organization talent shows in full drag. all kinds of things. I could sit in here and talk to you all day about what my dad said I could do, and I did, with impunity and glee and aplomb, my entire childhood. My father taught me to hold my head in dignity and go forth into the world with candor and forthrightness.
Do you remember how that came across to you? How that guidance came down to you as a kid?
One of the things that my dad said I had to do was win some scholarships so that I could get the hell up out of the valley, because I was never going to make it as a farmer. And it was a very serious job. Go get the job done. One of the things that you did to win a scholarship was run for student body office. And so I decided to run for pep promoter, which is essentially the head cheerleader. And I was on my way to school, and I was putting on my costume for the pep assembly, which consisted of a big lipstick smile from ear to ear, huge, several inches thick, with glitter all over my face. My brother was driving me to school. He said, "What the hell are you doing?" I said, "I'm putting on my costume." He was horrified. He called my father. He said, "You got to get up there. They're going to kill him. Go to the high school now." So I'm doing my campaign and running with the socialites, and here comes my father. And my father is wearing his clodhopper boots and his Farmer Brown pants with cow crop on them, and he's missing half of his teeth, and he looks like Pa Kettle, and I love him, and he's my dad, but I don't need Pa Kettle raining on my parade. So I ducked him. So we had the assembly and blah, 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 and I did my little spiel, and things are going great. So I'm riding home. My dad is taking me home because I have to start pitching bales. And he said, "I thought I saw a kid look just like you duck out on his dad when I walked down the hall this morning, but I knew it wasn't you because you'd never do that to your dad." And I said, "Dad, did you have to wear your cow crap pants to my pep assembly?" And he said, "Oh, I see. This isn't about what you were wearing. It's about what I was wearing. I get it. Look here, I'm a farmer. This is what I do. I don't have time to change my clothes just to run up to the high school to see what the hell is going on with you. I'm proud of who I am, and I'm proud of what I do. This is what I wear. Now let's talk about you. Were you proud of yourself with your lipstick smile and glitter on your face, all up and down to your ears? Were you proud of yourself?" And I said, "Well, I think I'm going to win the election." And he said, "I think you're going to win the election too, but it's not what I asked you. I asked you if you were proud of yourself." At this point, I'm not saying anything. And he said, "You know I'm not well." I said, "Yes, Dad, I know." He said, "You know I'm not going to be around when you're a full-grown man to help you with any of this stuff. You know that." And I said, "Yes, Dad, I know." And he said, "Well, I'm going to tell you something today now. I'm going to tell you something now. And it might not mean anything to you now, but it will mean something when you get to be an adult. And I want you to promise me that you remember what I tell you." I said, "Okay, I promise." He said, "Who are you going to go out with at night when you go to the University of Washington Drama School?" And I said, "I don't know." And he said, "I think you do know. Now listen up. Whoever you run around with at night, don't sneak like you did today. Because if you sneak, it means you think you're doing the wrong thing. And if you spend your life thinking you're doing the wrong thing, you'll ruin your immortal soul. So don't sneak, and remember it." I ask you, man, what sissy in 1958 in what hayfield in America got that from his father? Everybody else was getting the kicked out of them, being humiliated and disgraced, thrown out of the family, being beat up by their brothers. That's what was happening to country sissies in 1958. But it wasn't happening to me because of my father. He wouldn't do it, and he wouldn't allow anybody else to do it to me, and he wouldn't allow my brothers to humiliate me, and he wouldn't humiliate me, and he taught me not to humiliate myself. I was way ahead of the curve without even knowing it. So why did I write the world's first gay country album? My dad said I could.
So it took the world a little while to catch up to your dad, it seems. Fast forwarding back up to the early 70s after Lavender Country, you talked a little bit about some of the ways that it got kind of pushed to the margins. And what was that experience like for you?
Lots of people don't get recognized for their music, and that was fine. And that was where I was when somebody put one of my songs on YouTube, the song that we won't say over the radio.
You can if you want.
Oh, good. I have a song, and the name of the song is Crying These Sucking Tears. And if any song sunk Lavender Country for 40 years, it was that one. But 40 years went by, and somebody put Second Tears on YouTube, and I didn't know it because they don't do YouTube. And somebody else heard it and said, what is this? And they went to eBay and they found an old used vinyl for sale on one of my old Lavender Countries. And they bought it and they realized what it was. And I still don't know anything. And that person took it to a label, and the label called me on the phone, and I just about hung up on them because I knew it was an encyclopedia salesman, because nobody was going to be buying Lavender Country. But it wasn't an encyclopedia salesman, and it was really a label, and they reissued Lavender Country, and my life changed really fast. There's been 3 documentaries about Lavender Country. I did 2 live ballets of Lavender Country music in San Francisco. There's a feature-length movie being made about Lavender Country right now. So it's great to have all this acknowledgement, go down in history and all that, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, okay, it's an ego trip. But I made Lavender Country as a statement in 1973 to transform society through political organizing. So now I have the opportunity and also the revolutionary obligation to use Lavender Country for what I made it for in the first place. So that's a real bottom line joy. And the other bottom line joy is that I get to take my father with me into history, and I get to acclaim his contribution to this movement.
Patrick Haggerty's father, Charles, died in 1961. Today, Haggerty lives with his husband in Bremerton. His album, Lavender Country, is archived in the Country Music Hall of Fame.
There's nothing left but holes in your weary sexist roles. Time to trade them old PJs for a Goodwill negligee.